authors to be informed, you know what to do. Subscribe and share the episodes. Project of SoCal 350. The show can be found on KPFK, KPFT, all major podcast apps, and at ecojusticeradio.org. Executive producer and host, myself, Jack Eit, co-host Carrie Kim, and engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
I'll go a step further with it. Lytics SF300 is the model that they primarily use in the package cars. The driver-facing camera is recording all the time. They leave it running when they get out of the vehicles to make a delivery. Anytime that driver is on duty, that vehicle is assigned to someone, that camera is recording. It's absolutely preposterous for them to claim that it has no audio or video capability. The device itself can override its own settings, so the settings are meaningless.
Good memories are forever, said the dog on the tombstone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home. I got a hidden flask, I'm paid in cash, got a cross above my bed. You know, I hitchhiked from Chicago, and a man walked up and said, this is a union town, a union town.
Good morning, and welcome to another working week. This is KPFK's Working Voices. And sitting in for Joy Alla, I'm Hal Lohr.
And I'm your co-host, Marissa Remsky of CWA Local 9003.
And in this morning's show, Steve Zeltzer's Labor Media discusses the dangers of infrared cameras in trucks with Teamster Wayne Atkins. Reggie Wong took us to Peace Week for an interview with About Face's Veterans Against the War rep, Takune Norrising. And later in the show, I'll have your latest labor news with this week's Working Voices update. All this and more coming up this morning. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. This is Working Voices.
In our first offering this morning, Steve Zeltzer from his Labor Video YouTube channel brings us a discussion with Wayne Atkins from the International Brotherhood of Teamsters on his finding on the health risks and human rights implications from the infrared cameras now required to be in delivery trucks by most U.S. companies.
No school, no shopping in the store, we're the heartbeat of the city and we're wanting more. Feel us in the face of the billionaire class. Face first, the forwards and the mass. Who's make you a member?
This is Steve Zeltzer with Workweek. And one of the issues that we've been covering intensively is the role of AI in the workplace for working people. AI is being introduced throughout all industries in the United States and around the world, and it is affecting their lives, it is affecting their health and safety. It's having a radical effect, and also it's eliminating millions of workers. And one of the other things that we have covered is the introduction of cameras, infrared cameras into the trucks of truck drivers, Teamsters, UPS drivers, and other drivers, because workers have found out that as a result of the introduction of these infrared cameras, they themselves have become tortured and used as guinea pigs to train the cameras. They're getting tumors, they're getting cataracts on their eyes, and this is a horrific torture of working people in the United States and internationally, that this technology is being introduced in the workplace without any control, without any oversight, and it's affecting millions of workers. And joining us today are some Teamsters who have begun to research and examine the role of these cameras and have begun a fight to defend themselves and all workers in trucks. So why don't they introduce themselves?
Yeah, I'm Wayne Atkins with the Local 100 in Sharonville, Ohio.
Chris Schaefer, a union steward with Local 100, Sharonville UPS Feeder Department.
Well, welcome to our show. So, Wayne, why don't you talk about how you discovered that these cameras were injuring people and how it's affecting you and other Teamsters?
Yeah, actually, my research, I was focused more on the violation of the contract. So I knew quite a bit about this stuff to begin with. And then I'm sitting in a safety meeting in Sharonville, and the cameras came up, and my supervisor said, guys, it's not even a camera. It's a light sensor that can detect your body position. Anybody who knows anything about cameras, all optical cameras are light sensors. That's what they do, is they record light either, you know, on a light sensitive film, or in the case of a digital camera, with an imaging sensor. So I started looking into it, and I found that Lytics puts out nothing online, absolutely nothing about the internal components of their cameras, about their hardware at all. And they're locked up with security screws. There's covers over the ports. So you can't find out anything without messing with a camera. So I bought 13 of these cameras, the same models that we use in package cars and feeder trucks in Sharonville. Matched up the model numbers and only bought those specific models because I wanted to see what the sensors were, what was under the lens. Now, they've told us in writing there's multiple sensors under the lens. That's a lie. The only thing under the lens is a CMOS imaging sensor, which is a camera. So I identified the sensors, and I also found that the road-facing camera, which they readily call a camera, has the same exact imaging sensor as the driver-facing camera. It's an Omnivision OV10635 imaging sensor. So when they say, they put in writing multiple times that this has no audio or video capability, which is an outright lie.
Who put that in writing?
UPS. UPS. Multiple times.
So they actually...
They're telling the drivers that it has no audio or video capability.
And they put that in writing?
Yes.
Through PCMs that they would have monthly or weekly, especially when these cameras were first being installed. And there was quite a bit of inquiry from the drivers. The PCMs that came out were, oh, no, these no video capability, no recording capability. And so, yeah, as Wayne's explaining, yeah, quite contrary to the fact.
So they straight out lied to Teamsters about what this camera was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Prior to contract negotiations, which became a sticking point because Article 6 prohibits them from installing devices with driver-facing cameras. It says that any driver-facing camera will be disabled and rendered inoperable to prevent recording and monitoring of all in-cab activities.
And that's in the contract.
That's in the contract.
Article 6, yep, yes.
Now, the distinction is, you know, they like to give throw this letter into the mix. It's a letter from Amanda Wayhunt at Lytics to Joanna Cornell, who was the global director of safety at UPS. And the letter basically just assures you that there's no recording and that there's no video of the driver in the portal. But the portal is just where the company goes to access video. Lytics actually has patents. They patented a procedure where they can, in the case where a union negotiates for the cameras to be off, or they say set not to record, they can still use the camera to monitor the driver. And then when they see certain criteria, they can override the do not record setting, record video. And if they think it's valuable for the company, they can channel that to the company through legal channels.
And that ability, Steve, is part of the AI tech built into this thing. It can actually turn itself on to record. So maybe settings have been set, do not record, do not monitor. The camera itself can actually turn itself back on and start recording. If it monitors, or if it recognizes using its built-in AI algorithm that it senses some sort of activity going on in cab, it'll trigger, it'll turn itself on and start recording.
And for Teamsters, the issue of these cameras, have they been used to retaliate against Teamsters?
I'll go a step further with it. Lytics SF300 is the model that they primarily use in the package cars. That same camera system is being used by Kroger. Now, my neighbor was a distribution manager for Kroger, and he was familiar with these. I got him to send me a photo of one of their cameras and verified that it was the same model. They're recording all the time. Mm-hmm. The driver-facing camera is recording all the time. They leave it running when they get out of the vehicles to make a delivery. Anytime that driver is on duty, that vehicle is assigned to someone, that camera is recording. It's absolutely preposterous for them to claim that it has no audio or video capability. Now, what they're talking about is the settings, but as we've already touched on, the device itself can override its own settings, so the settings are meaningless. They come up with all kinds of patents where they claim they can, for instance, tell blood alcohol content based on what they're observing through the camera. And they say they're monitoring heavy breathing, pupil dilation, sweating. If you've ever cranked up legs on an old trailer, you see a driver get in the cab and he's breathing hard. That doesn't mean a thing. This is just arbitrary criteria that they came up with to give them a reason to override the do not record settings. That's all it is. They actually claim that they got a patent on creating driver health profiles through a camera and the ECM data.
So I mean, it sounds like they're tracking people like guinea pigs. They're using drivers as guinea pigs.
You know why? It's valuable data. Think about who would want driver health information. It would be insurers. At my old company, you got breaks on your insurance if you were not a tobacco user, if you took a physical every year. In that scenario, if this camera catches you doing something you said you're not doing, if you're using tobacco, or if you're a diabetic and they catch you eating candy bars or whatever, it's preposterous. Insurance companies want that data. They claim they can weigh you through the air pressure in your seat or estimate your weight. But here's the thing. The good they could be doing, they're not. It would be really simple for them to train an AI to recognize the symptoms of stroke and alert someone that this driver needs help. But they haven't done that. Yeah, that would protect the drivers. They're not interested in driver safety. That's what they claim. But they're not. If they were, that would be a very simple AI model to train, because there are visible signs of stroke occurring. Same thing with cardiac arrest.
And also, I mean, if Teamsters are getting cataracts and tumors near their eyes, what is the union doing about it? What is the company doing about it?
So we just had a state level grievance hearing on this. Wayne presented for roughly an hour and a half. Roughly 30 patents that he went over, without a doubt showed them that these cameras are indeed monitoring. While we couldn't prove recording, we could prove monitoring, because they talk to you in cab. If you do something, if I put my sun visor down and it blocks the lens, it says, please check for lens obstruction. So it's monitoring inside of the cab. And, you know, these things use the infrared at night. Drivers are behind these cameras all day long. You don't have a short shift in there. You're not in and out in 15 minutes. You're hours behind these things. So it's like Wayne said, hours of data collecting, hours behind infrared vision. The union at that hearing sided with the company, said there was no contract violation. I don't know why no questions were asked. I wish more questions had been asked. At the very least, deadlock it and let it go in front of national committee or national panel that addresses national language. We weren't given that opportunity. They had said prior hearings had been heard on these cameras, but I guarantee nobody presented the amount of information that Wayne presented. Nobody bought cameras and handed them to every person on that panel, dissected, labeled, numbered, named. A stack, the presentation, like it's over 100 pages long, but very detailed. It referenced every single exhibit that we had as you followed along through the presentation. So it was very easy to follow along. I hate to say it. I love our union, but I felt lack of participation.
And the issue of protection of workers, it seems like that's a first thing that the union should do,
yeah,
to protect the health and safety of a worker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a basic fundamental principle of being, yeah, in a trade union, that the union has to protect their members, the health and safety of their members.
Yep.
But what I don't understand is, if all these workers are getting injured, and I know that you've been doing surveys of people who've been getting tumors, who've been getting cataracts, and yet the company and the union are denying this?
Yeah, and so NIOSH is involved in it as well, which is the investigative part of OSHA. And they currently are working on this. They have been denied access to a UPS facility because they wanted to come and look at the cameras in cab. But yeah, those requests have been denied. And, you know, we've got a place right here in Cincinnati. NIOSH has a big, huge facility, our office right here in Cincinnati. So it would have been great. We're 20, 30 minutes away from that office, that they could have got onto our property and looked at all these cameras. And UPS has denied those requests.
Raise the scarlet standard high, beneath its walls we'll live and die. Though cowards cringe and trigger sneer, we'll keep the red flag flying here.
You're listening to Working Voices on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles.
So they're denying this agency, NIOSH, from even going to the facility and checking out the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's because they know that NIOSH would say that these cameras are doing these things to workers?
I mean, it kind of looks that way to me.
Yeah. I'll give you another example of how strong the infrared light is. The electronic log devices that we use, our IVIS, they're mounted on the dash. And I had problems with one at one point, where it kept powering down, it would overheat and power down. And I called and they said, well, check and see if the battery is swelled up, the battery pack on the back of the device. And it was. And, he said, when I went up to get another one, they told me, yeah, we've had a rash of these. So that got me thinking, and I checked to see what, you know, if lithium ion batteries are affected by infrared light, and they are. And those devices sit at the top of the dash, right in front of that camera. You know, exposure over time can lead to swelling up and rupturing lithium ion batteries. What's it doing to the driver?
Good question. Well, I mean, the whole idea of the introduction of technology, whether it's cameras or other technology into the workplace, should that be allowed before there's an investigation on the effect of that technology for working people? I mean, it seems like they don't give a damn what the effect is on workers with the introduction of this technology, even if it harms workers.
Yeah. Also, there's privacy concerns on your cell phone. If you download an app, for instance, from the Play Store, it details what type of data is collected, and you have to approve that, or you can just not use that app. Because they regulate for consumers what kind of data is being collected and how it's being used. If it's being sold to someone else, who's getting that data? These devices are basically repackaged cell phones. You got a front and a rear camera. You got the processor. You've got the GPS. You've got Wi-Fi connectivity. You've got the 4G connectivity. It has all of the components of the cell phone, except for the interface. The driver can't interface other than just to push a button to record. So it can collect the same types of data through that camera that your cell phone can. And they are creating, they patented process to create driver health profiles. They are tracking drivers' performance, both as individual and collectively, to see how fast drivers are taking a particular turn at a particular location, or, you know, that way they can compare driver to driver and driver to the collective group, to see, you know, who's driving is egregious or whatever. Who's getting that data? Who are they sharing that data with? There's no regulation on a device like this that can collect as much information as your cell phone can. And yet they're free to collect that data and share it.
And we just had a report that Mark Zuckerberg, in his report to the engineers, told the engineers that he's, some of whom he's laying off, that they're collecting the information of the top engineers and then using that to get rid of them without their knowledge. You know, we're going to use your ability, your creative ability to track you and then get rid of you using AI. And that must be a threat to those people who want to control the information, who want you to be dependent on the union officials, and fear that workers have that if they challenge union officials, they'll be isolated. And that's the other issue that I think has to be raised at this point, is there's a lot of concern that if you not only are fighting the company, like on the issue of these cameras, but then you take on the union, that you're going to be retaliated against. And that creates a lot of fear among workers. And the fearless slate, what's happening with the fearless slate?
We're moving right along. You know, we're doing our thing. We're spreading the word, getting the word out, making sure everybody knows. Yeah, we're excited about this. I've never seen a small group of people like what we have. It's rank and file, right? Most of us are rank and file. And to be able to be generating the buzz that we're generating, that we are really relating with other rank and file members that are feeling the same emotions that we are, and just the frustration, the irritation, just the disconnect.
High quality right. videos. I mean, that's historic. That's phenomenal.
It's great. and it's not just the slave members, Steve. It's not just the slave members. I mean, I know we do have a lot from slave members, but we've gotten videos just from people that are fearless supporters, people that are fearless themselves. They're like, you know, we support the cause. Here's a video that I put together, or here's a song that I wrote for you to share with the slate and everyone and all the supporters. So it, the AI, while it really is a threat to workers for right now, though, it definitely is helping us educate and unify. And when we get into office, we can better control AI, and hopefully not have so much of the bad side effects to it, but actually use it for good purposes, like what we're doing with this slate.
AI should free people. Instead, it's being used by these billionaires to destroy people, torture people, and to eliminate their jobs so they have no future. And I think that's why people are fed up and angry in this country. Young graduates are booing these AI tech billionaires who are bragging about how you better take this AI, and that's the way it's going to be. And people are saying, no way. And the whole issue of introduction of technology into the workplace. Right now in this country, it's let it rip. There's no regulation. And the bosses can basically do whatever they want. I know I did a video on the a grocery clerk in St. Louis who had carpal tunnel syndrome on both hands. And, you know, when that was introduced into the United States, they were told, don't worry about it. When she started to get carpal tunnel syndrome, the boss said, well, it's all in your mind. Take an aspirin. You know, you don't pay attention to it. Millions of workers were affected by these scanners, and no research, no education. I learned in Sweden, they do research on the introduction of technology in the workplace, how it's going to affect workers. You would think that that would be a basic human right. Before technology is introduced in the workplace, the workers have a right to know what is the effect of that technology on their lives.
Mm-hmm. You, yeah, I think EU does a much better job at protecting workers than we do here in the States. Yep.
And yet the unions, I mean, are not organizing nationally. I know we've had some conferences. We're going to have more at laborfest.net on that commemorates the San Francisco General Strike on the introduction of technology and AI. But this is not just one union. It's not just one industry. All workers and all industries are faced with this. Healthcare, education, actors and actresses, writers. I mean, it's affecting the entire working class. So this is a broad issue, actually, with the potential of uniting all workers in this country.
Yeah. Yep. And it shouldn't be, what is the slogan? The IBT against everyone. We shouldn't be like that. It should be the IBT with everyone, making a strong union solidarity of unions across this country, making safe workplace for all workers across all trades. I feel that we've at the IBT have alienated ourselves from the other unions. And I think really the only way, like what you had just mentioned, to really protect everybody is for all of them to come together. We all have to come together. We have to. Yeah. I mean, we're working for the same things, right? Workers' rights, workers' work conditions, combating AI. So we're all working for the same thing, and we all need to get on the same team.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you all for joining us. We've been talking about the effect of these AI cameras on drivers, Teamster drivers, and all workers, because, I mean, if you're in a non-union company, you're being affected by this technology as well. And also the issue of what these cameras are, what they mean to working people, what you can do about it, and the fight for our unions to start standing up and defending workers who are being really harmed, seriously harmed by these cameras in their trucks. So thanks for joining us on Work Week.
That was Steve Zeltser from his Labor Video YouTube channel. For more videos and insights from Steve Zeltser, you can go to his Labor Video YouTube channel, or now you can find him at the Production of Labor Video Project on the web at labormedia.net. And for the latest information on the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, you can always find them at teamster.org.
'Cause nowhere is safe in this world of change. Consent is manufactured through bigotry and rage. So billionaires and fascists can rule without a fight. But their will can be broken if the people unite. But their will can be broken if the people unite.
This is Gary Oldman. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
Since 2016, Los Angeles has had Fleet Week, a Memorial Day event that glorifies all things military at the waterfront in San Pedro. For 11 years, local peace groups offered an alternative with the LA Harbor Peace Week to show the public war is not the answer. Veterans from the group About Face, Veterans Against the War, were at Peace Week to tell enlisted folks that they don't have to follow illegal orders. Reggie Wong reports.
Hi, this is Reggie Wong with this KPFK update, and I am here with
Takun Norisingh.
Can you tell me what group are you with?
I'm with Veterans About Face, or About Face Veterans Against the War.
And why are you here at San Pedro Fleet Week at the LA Harbor?
I'm here at San Pedro Fleet Week, Peace Week, with Code Pink, because I just wanted to take a moment to speak truth to power and also, like, spread the word, let service members know that they have options. They don't have to participate in illegal wars. I have flyers with me today. Give them resources as far as conscientious objection goes or other means of resisting.
Are you a veteran?
I am a veteran. I'm a 5-year Marine Corps veteran. I was a public affairs specialist, so it's the same job J.D. Vance had when J.D. Vance was a Marine.
And as a veteran, why did you join About Face?
I have had problems with the government after the first Trump administration. I was enlisted during the first Trump administration, and I saw things happening back home that really didn't align with me. When I was in Japan, you know, like as a non-combatant, a woman was raped and murdered by a U.S. contractor in 2016. That was a very pivotal moment for me as well. Protests broke out across the island when they told me, when I first got to the island, they told me if I see any protesters, they're paid by China. When that incident happened, I realized, oh, that's obviously not true. On top of that, this isn't the first time it's happened. The Okinawan people have been getting raped and murdered by service members since World War II, to be frank. And I remember, like, when I was enlisted during this time, there was a land return ceremony that the Americans were putting on to give land back to the island as an attempt of PR, as an attempt to lighten their image. And as a public affairs specialist, as a videographer, I was sent to go cover that event, and when they bust me onto the compound, there were like thousands of protesters outside. And that was just another instance where I was like, yeah, these people aren't getting paid by China. These people are 100% here out of genuine concern and genuine beliefs. And I guess after the Trump administration sent down the National Guard and active duty Marines from 29 Palms, that was when I realized, like, okay, it's time for me to, like, go from just being a lone protester to, like, joining an organization. And I think, like, the nature of seeing National Guard and seeing active duty Marines in front of the detention center in Los Angeles really pushed me to join About Face in particular.
Okay, so today we're supposed to be honoring veterans, and we're here in front of the USS Iowa, a decommissioned Navy ship, and we're here at San Pedro Fleet Week, which is supposed to be like to honor veterans. Meanwhile, this administration is sending military to Cuba as well, and there's already military in Iran and just all over. What do you think? I mean, what are your thoughts on this Memorial Day?
It's really despicable. One of our friends told us that they're playing What a Wonderful World inside the event space earlier, and I was just like, that's crazy. That's dystopian. You know, you have Fleet Week going on all while family members of service members are getting kidnapped outside of Camp Pendleton, like as they drive in the base.
And can you tell us more about, like, you know, with your flyers, and you're telling our enlisted folks that they don't have to follow illegal orders. So can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, you know, I was also out here on Friday, kind of handing out flyers, talking to enlisted folks, and they're pretty hesitant to talk to me. I'm sure they were briefed to not talk to, like, hippies. I'm sure they're like given instructions on how to deal with people like me and deal with Code Pink. I think it's also important to let family members know. It's important to talk to the media and let the media know, because I guarantee you, there are people who are enlisted right now that see what's happening that don't agree what's going on. Especially in terms of, I think, the domestic front. You know, you have so many black and brown people, so many families that have immigrant backgrounds, so many service members that come from immigrant backgrounds that see what's happening with ICE. That can't sit right. You know, and if people can't conscientious object, which, like, it is a hard thing to do, at the very least, there's other means of resistance as well.
Now, conscientious objectors are protected, right?
So if you seek out conscientious objection and you manage to get it, like, you retain all your benefits, which, you know, like, a lot of people enlist into the military because of the poverty draft, and that's important for a lot of people. And if you get conscientious objection, like, you are protected. There's this thing called a dishonorable discharge, where if you get that comes with penalties. That comes with penalties when you're applying for a job. You have to, like, put on your job application that you got a dishonorable discharge. Conscientious objection, like, that doesn't happen. You essentially get out a normal person with your rights intact.
And I forgot to mention that you're here for an event called Peace Week. Mm-hmm. You were here handing out flyers for Peace Week, which includes groups like Code Pink San Pedro, Military Families Speak Out, as well as About Face, and San Pedro Neighbors for Peace and Justice, and other groups. I see a lot of our Long Beach people here. Shout out to our Long Beach folks. What do you think of Peace Week?
I think the display and the willingness of passerbys to stop and reflect and really think about what we're doing overseas, I think it's really important to have a counterbalance. Like, even anything, any kind of counterbalance to this propaganda event. You know, I think it is important work. I think it's noble work, in my opinion. And it's really fascinating to, like, see people who are receptive and are wearing stickers and are actually, like, and then proceed to, like, go into the event space. It's kind of cool. You know, like, there's a couple cool stickers that Code Pink has been giving out. I think one says Make Out Not War. A lot of people like that. They've been, like, slapping that sticker on and walking around the event space. It's cheeky. I like it. You know, like, above all, though, there needs to be a reminder of the gravity of this situation. You know, like, this is a big recruiting effort for the military. Fleet Week is a big recruiting effort, and it's a big PR effort. And it doesn't talk about the realities of what our service members face. The realities of what our service members face are right there. You're not gonna see that in there. So it's important. It's important for Vets for Peace to be out here. It's important for Code Pink to be out here, because they're not gonna give you the reality of the situation.
If we want more information, where do we go to?
The main national page, which is Vets About Face on Instagram, and then there is the Los Angeles local page, which covers OC, IE, and LA. That is About Face Los Angeles.
Okay. And do you have a podcast, or do you have a...
I don't have a podcast, no.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
That was Reggie Wong reporting from last week's LA Harbor Peace Week demonstration. For more information on the About Face Veterans Against the War, you can go to aboutfaceveterans.org or at About Face Los Angeles on Instagram.
There's power in a factory, power in the land, power in the hand of the worker. But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand. There is power.
You're listening to Working Voices on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
And finally, from the KPFK News Desk, Associate Producer Hal Lohr brings us up to date on labor news with this morning's Working Voices Update.
This is Working Voices Associate Producer Hal Lohr with this morning's Working Voices Update.
It absolutely is. Look, when we passed Assembly Bill 1138 last year, I was proud to co-author it. And it did a lot of good for the industry. But admittedly, we were late to the ballgame. We needed to do this years ago. And the other thing I would note is this. The legislation last year does include a provision for post-production, but only if the principal photography was in California. Times are changing. Technology is emerging. And when you have other jurisdictions with competitive standalone tax incentive programs, mm-hmm. we have got to compete to keep these jobs right here in California. And that's the reality is no matter the gold standard is always to have production from beginning to end in Los Angeles, right. in California. We still have post-production careers right here in our district, right here in the state of California. We want to keep those jobs. We want to recruit more opportunities for folks to be gainfully employed. And a lot of folks ask me why I'm running this bill. People are hurting. And in 2026, people are worried about the future of this industry. They're worried about the cost of living, the high cost of housing. I can think of no better issue to be working on together this year. This is about keeping jobs in our district. This is about keeping people gainfully employed and giving them hope. The reason is because when you have post-production work right here in the state of California, it's not just benefiting those in the entertainment industry. The downstream and collateral consequences, all the mom and pop businesses that benefit from that economic activity, staying in California, it is a huge boon to our economy. But I think California has to admit that we have taken this industry for granted. And only now are we really waking up and saying we want to keep production and post-production jobs here in this state. That means we're going to have to compete with the number of other jurisdictions in the United States and internationally that have already taken this step. So many others already have a standalone post-production tax credit program. It's time that we join the fray. But you can't just deal with costs. You also have to look at economic generation. We want to keep good quality, high-paying jobs here in California. This is a way to do that. I think this is an investment that we have to make. We can't afford to not make it. Yes, it's a difficult budget climate, but there is a way to get this done.
Okay. That clip was from California Assemblymember Nick Schultz from Burbank 6 weeks ago. Last week on Thursday, the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees Local 700, Motion Picture Editors Guild, released a statement that California Assembly Bill AB 2319, the post-production tax credit bill, has passed a California State Assembly vote. AB 2319 differs from California's film tax credit, which requires 75% of principal photography to have been shot in the state of California. And instead, AB 2319 aims to incentivize projects for post-production work to be done in California, even if they filmed elsewhere or were unable to qualify for the current tax incentive bill. Supporters say they want to level the playing field by targeting post-production business that is not evaporating but rather being lured out of California's struggling post-production industry by tax incentive programs in red states and other countries. Based upon the economic modeling of direct, indirect, and induced efforts of this eroding post-production market, the total economic impact to California is astounding, Assemblymember Nick Schultz, author of the bill, said during an April 6th press conference. We're talking about 4,400 lost jobs and more than $407 million in lost wages, and in terms of total economic output in California, more than $1.63 billion lost annually to other jurisdictions. After Assembly passage of AB 2319, the bill now heads to the state Senate. If it passes there, it will go to Governor Newsom, and if signed, the bill would become law on January 1st. Assemblymember Nick Schultz, author of the bill, recently discussed the bill and answered questions during that May 8th town hall organized by California Post Alliance, or CAPA, sponsor of the bill. During the meeting, CAPA President Marielle Abuanza, who is Executive VP of Business Development at Signature Post, announced that the Television Academy has endorsed the bill. CAPA acknowledged and thanked supporters, and according to Motion Picture Editors Guild IATSE Local 700, Guild members sent an estimated 3,200 letters to state assembly members as part of its political engagement committee's campaign to rally bill support. The increasing trend of layoffs in the tech industry continued last week as artificial intelligence reshapes the industry. Mountain View-based Intuit, the maker of TurboTax, last Wednesday said it was laying off 17% of its workforce, or about 3,000 employees. as part of a restructuring to cut costs and invest in AI tech. Intuit said it will close its office in Reno and Woodland Hills and incur an estimated $300 million-plus in restructuring charges. And if that's not enough, Intuit announced the layoffs on the same day it reported its third quarter results, in which revenue jumped 10% from a year earlier to $8.56 billion. The Intuit shakeup adds to the count of more than 114,000 tech center employees laid off this year, according to layoffs.fyi. Best known for its TurboTax platform, Intuit has branched into accounting with QuickBooks, credit scoring through Credit Karma, and email automation via MailChimp. But facing increased competition for AI-driven tax solutions, the company is integrating AI across its entire portfolio as a deep sense of anxiety has settled in the tech job market, propelled by consecutive layoffs and coding tasks being automated by AI. As a growing number of tech leaders have portrayed the role of human software engineers as a human in the loop, overseeing and verifying AI agents that do the work of coders. By 2027, software developers are expected to see a 3% job contraction due to AI coding capabilities, according to Labor Automation Forecasting Hub, a popular website where forecasters predict how AI will reshape the future of technical workforces.
We never get paid what our labor is worth. That's why we often in the days on the way to our work. And when we get there, we can't wait to be out. So let me tell you what it's about.
Hi, this is Halle Berry, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
And if you needed an example on how a union's work is never done, on May 20th, 2026, in a 5-2 vote, the LA Unified Board finalized 657 layoffs, and most of these terminated positions are in the school district's central office. The LAUSD says that these reductions will save the district about $90 million annually. But the cuts follow a last-minute April 15, 2020 strike cancellation after SEIU, United Teachers Los Angeles, and the Associated Administrators of Los Angeles reached separate contracts. Critics, including SEIU's own political opponents, had accused the unions of prioritizing lobbying for state funding over protecting workers. This comes after the district adopted a fiscal stabilization plan last June in response to a years-long buildup of deficit spending. During last Thursday's meeting, staff also previewed a plan to cut $3.6 billion from the district's budget in the next 3 years, with thousands more layoffs projected. And earlier this year, information technology workers, office technicians, and staff were given preliminary layoff notices. Thursday's vote finalized those terminations. The exact number of people leaving the district by the end of the school year on June 30th is unclear. Both retirements and resignations could affect the official count. During the meeting, union leader Max Arias, executive director of SEIU Local 99, which represents school support staff included in the reduction in force, voiced opposition to these layoffs, accusing the LAUSD of trying to balance its budget on the backs of low-wage education workers. And SEIU Local 99 has yet to formalize a contract with the school district, so negotiations could undo part of this most recent mass termination plan. As of now, laid-off employees will be placed on a reemployment list in order of seniority for the next 3 years and will be eligible for openings in their categories. The district has also stated its plans to hold workshops on resume writing and other job search skills for those let go. However, union leaders stress that the fight is ongoing and that the cuts are still just one part of LAUSD's larger unresolved budget crisis. So SEIU Local 99 is fighting to stop the LAUSD layoffs by combining public advocacy, member mobilization, and legal contractual challenges to resist the cuts, arguing that there can be no denial that LAUSD intends to target essential low-wage workers and undermine the district's ability to serve students.
Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends. So, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz?
And a little classic Janis Joplin. For those who haven't heard about this one, Mercedes-Benz, looking to consolidate research endeavors in Atlanta, said this month it plans to close its Long Beach research and design facility by the end of the year. Company officials said the closures will begin July 6th and wrap up by the end of December, resulting in the local loss of at least 72 high-paying jobs at the 3,200-square-foot facility in East Long Beach. Positions including engineers, technicians, lawyers, and project managers, according to a May 7th filing with the state's employment department. It's unclear how many people will be fired or transferred, as some will choose between accepting a severance package or transferring to another facility in Atlanta, Ann Arbor, Michigan, or San Jose. Others, according to the filing, were offered severance without an option to relocate based on business and operational needs. Workers who spoke on the conditions of anonymity said most would relocate to Atlanta, where the company plans to build a $34 million facility near its new North American headquarters in Sandy Springs, a suburb about 16 miles north of the major city. The facility is set to be completed in August this year, according to a Georgia governor's office news release. The Long Beach facility, which opened in 1997, was listed for sale earlier this year and is responsible for nearly 100 technology patents, according to Mercedes-Benz, ranging from powertrain development to autonomous driving and in-car features. It employed about 186 employees. Long Beach City Council member Tanua Thrash Natuk said her office is actively trying to pair laid-off workers with employment elsewhere in the city and helping workers identify their next opportunity in Long Beach. In a setback for organized labor, the Los Angeles City Council has officially delayed minimum wage increases for tourism workers after the final vote Tuesday, pushing back a boost to $30 an hour for airport and hotel workers from 2028 to 2030. The move predictably comes after LA lawmakers faced pressure from business interests, which had gathered enough signatures to put a measure on the November ballot to repeal the business tax that could have financially ruined the city if it passed. And again, predictably, after the city council voted to delay the $30 wage boost, the leaders behind the ballot measure withdrew their anti-tax measure. Originally celebrated as an Olympic wage, the $30 minimum was pegged to the arrival of the 2028 Games in Los Angeles. But a battle to upend it started as soon as the city council passed it last year, when business groups decided to advance their ballot measure after unions wouldn't broker a deal with them directly. And of course, tourism workers who have been counting on the much-needed wage increases aren't happy and have openly called the political maneuver taken by the groups of business interests a shakedown. More on this as the story develops. In LA trade and economic news, the Port of Los Angeles last week reported its second busiest April on record in 2026, processing 890,000 container units, up 5.7% compared to April 2025. This growth was driven by a 5% year-over-year increase in imports and a 21% jump from March's volume, reflecting strong consumer demand and early buildup of seasonal shipments, such as back-to-school and holiday goods. Port Executive Director Gene Soroka attributed the surge to a resilient U.S. consumer and ongoing import flows from Asia, with the next wave of goods already in motion. Year-to-date, the port's total trade reached 3.28 million TEUs, about 2% above its five-year average, but 2% below last year's pace, which was unusually high earlier in the year as importers rushed to avoid the Trump tariffs. Despite the strong import numbers, tariff uncertainty has weighed on the trade environment. In February, a federal judge struck down 10% global tariffs imposed by Trump under Section 122 of the Trade Act of 1974, which had never been done before. But the ruling has left importers unsure of the impact, and the Justice Department may appeal to the U.S. Court of Appeals. But it's not all good news for U.S. jobs, either, as outbound shipments fell 0.5%, reflecting the tariff's effects on export markets. And the port is also grappling with heavy fuel price increases due to Trump's unpopular war with Iran, which has raised shipping fuel costs at L.A. and Long Beach close to 20% more than other major U.S. global ports. Ships require millions of gallons of fuel, making the extra cost significant. Shippers are trying to cut fuel consumption and avoid expensive routes, but much of the cost is expected to be passed on to U.S. consumers in the form of higher product prices. So the takeaway here is that April's record high traffic shows the Port of L.A. strengths in imports despite geopolitical tensions, tariff disputes, and soaring fuel costs. However, ongoing Trump trade policies, uncertainties, and U.S. energy price pressures could temper growth in the months ahead. And finally, CBS News Radio, which provided news programming to an estimated 700 stations spanning the United States, signed off the air Friday night after nearly a century of broadcasting. The storied service, launched in September 1927, was the home of broadcast legends Edward R. Murrow and Dan Rather and many other familiar and trusted voices over its decades in operation. The decision to shutter the radio news service was announced in March with the company citing challenging economic realities. CBS News Radio first hit the airwaves just 7 years after what's been widely recognized as the first commercial radio broadcast. CBS News Radio brought millions of Americans coverage of major news events, including the attack on Pearl Harbor and the D-Day invasion, Queen Elizabeth II's coronation, the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, the New York City blackout of 1977, the Gulf War, and the 2003 space shuttle disaster. And, of course, CBS program host and correspondent Allison Keyes covered the news from Lower Manhattan on 9/11. As the final days of CBS News Radio approached, Allison Keyes and her colleagues reflected on its legacy and how it leaves a huge gap in the field of news. And for we here at KPFK, there is simply no way to deny the sadness when great broadcast voices go silent. I'm Working Voices Associate Producer Hal Lohr. This has been your Working Voices Update for June 1st, 2026. And thank you for listening. And that's our show for this week. Once again, we're asking our union people out there, our labor partners, locals, and regional officers, to seriously consider underwriting this show, because Working Voices and KPFK could really use your support. So please, contact the station at 818-985-5735 or kpfk.org. Explore the possibilities. We need to hear from you. You can also email your comments or questions to workingvoices@aol.com. Please contribute if you can at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. This is Hal Lohr.
And I'm your co-host, Marissa Remsky.
And our thanks to Joe Ayala, Steve Zeltzer, Dan McCrory, Gary Scott, Reggie Wong, and all our guests. Please continue to give what you can to keep us going. We're all in this together. And of course, always remember to educate, agitate, and organize.
I got work to do. I got so much work.
A
I'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in and especially thank those of you who pledged your support or renewed your membership to KPFK during this past fund drive. The support of generous listeners like you is what allows this listener-sponsored station to operate and to maintain its fierce independence. It's a very special relationship, so thank you.